The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at advanced medical testing centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin. And before we get to our discussion today, I'll tell you what's going to happen here tomorrow. Dan Lifton is going to be our special guest tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about a product that you might not necessarily know very much about. I'm talking about PQQ, and you're typically going to find PQQ in the food supply, and maybe because you're having some of the foods that are highly processed, highly preserved, maybe high sugar, maybe high sodium, maybe you're not getting as much PQQ as you could get. And tomorrow we're going to find out all about PQQ, the first new vitamin discovered since 1948. So, with all of that said, we'll get to today's discussion. Good morning, Dr. Slavin.
Good morning, Janet.
And do you have anything in particular on your mind this morning?
Well, I thought I'd start off with some news out of Iowa.
Well, I think might people just have had enough of Iowa this morning?
It comes from this farmer, and this year he's planting 2,400 acres of corn. Now, up until now, maybe in the last 10 years or so, he's been planting genetically modified corn, but this year he's going back to planting non-GMO corn.
So did this farmer discuss how he came to change his mind, or is he doing both, Dr. Slavin?
No, he says, we really never thought we'd go back to non-GMO, but the consumer has sent a clear message that a certain percentage of our customers are willing to pay more for non-GMO lines.
Yay. We're voting with our wallets.
This non-GMO thing has seemed to take hold and gain a lot of traction. But there's still a problem. Even though non-GMO is better than GMO, they're still spraying those crops with things so that you still have to look for organic. But at least that's the first step.
Very, very interesting. This non-GMO thing, was that a real quote? Because that kind of denigrates that perspective that you want to stay away from genetically modified crops.
Well, I'm thinking, to the farmers, just business. Where can I make the most money? The demand for non-GMO is up. All right, I'm going to supply the demand.
He better think about his own good health, because his exposure to glyphosate, which is repeatedly applied to his GMO crops, might not be so very good for his health.
Well, I think it's a trend. Consumers, particularly in the West and East Coasts, have demanded more GMO-free products because of health and safety concerns. And a number of major food companies are also going along with that. General Mills announced last year it will no longer use bioengineered cornstarch and sugarcane for its original Cheerios. Now, that means that the rest of their product line is using GMO or genetically engineered ingredients.
Yes, it does.
Chipotle Mexican Grill, the rapidly growing taco and burrito chain, is working to eliminate GMOs from its ingredients. And they said now that E. coli scare or something is over for now.
Declared free of E. coli by the CDC.
And their stocks went up a little bit.
Okay, that's good.
And Whole Foods will require labeling of all products sold in its U.S. and Canadian stores by 2018 to indicate whether they contain genetically modified ingredients or not.
Okay, so right now when you're shopping in a health food store, a lot of times you'll see a little round circular piece on the label that says non-GMO.
Now, this is a very interesting statistic. Last year, retail sales of products verified by the Non-GMO Project, which is the top U.S. certification organization, rose to $8.5 billion compared to $1.2 billion just 3 years ago. Despite this growth, it marked a fraction. Now, this really puts things into perspective. So you have $8.5 billion non-GMO. You have $630 billion in total supermarket sales in 2014, which probably are GMO. That's how big the discrepancy is. $630 billion versus $8.5 billion. But it went up from $1.2 billion to $8.5 billion. Now, they also said that there's a company called Cedar Falls, and it's getting flooded with calls from income-hungry farmers all over the Midwest looking for crops such as non-GMOs that could pay them a premium for their corn and soybeans. So, see, the farmers are doing it for money. I think they did it. They switched to GMO for money because they were promised by Monsanto that they'd sell, you'd have less destruction of the crops, and you'd sell more per acre, and that's what attracted them. But maybe it's not working out the way they were promised.
Apparently, they had been told that the yield per acre was going to be significantly higher, and that has turned out not to be true.
Now, recently, a farmer growing non-GMO soybean could get as much as $2 a bushel for soybeans and 35 cents a bushel for corn over the market price. So the demand is going up for non-GMO. They estimate that growers could save $150 for each bag of corn seed they buy that lacks the traits embedded in genetically modified crops, a difference that could help a farmer reach profitability.
When people find out what the gene that is used to genetically modify, let's say, corn, cauliflower, potatoes, zucchini, beets, and so on, there are things like E. coli, streptococcus, different types of fungus. And so you find that gene has been implanted, modifying the main gene from the crop. When you think about it, you think, I don't necessarily have any idea how that exposure might affect me in the long term. And then when you take a look at what very little research there is with regard to consumption of genetically modified crops, it is very disturbing. The rat studies have shown an increase in miscarriages, stillbirths, and offspring death in the first week after birth. There is infertility as a very specific outcome of feeding the rats genetically modified feed. So when you think about what's going on with the rats, and we haven't any long-term human studies, that picture is really scary.
It remains in this country that the overwhelming majority of corn and soybean grown, including Iowa, are still using genetically modified seeds. Now, genetically modified seeds were first introduced in the United States in 1996. That's when Monsanto's Roundup Ready soybeans first became available. And the farmers were promised that they would boost yields and reduce the need for costly chemicals needed to control the insects and weeds that affect crops. Last year, an estimated 97% of soybeans and 95% of corn grown in Iowa were biotech, figures that were both higher than the national average.
Okay, so that those crops, those are animal feed crops for the most part. Are they not, Dr. Slavin, or doesn't it say?
It doesn't say, but we know that a large percentage of those crops do go to animal feed. So that means, here again, that you may avoid it directly, but you're getting it indirectly if you're eating, you know, animals that aren't eating the natural diet, which is grass. So if you're getting corn-fed beef, that corn is genetically modified, and then the beef is genetically modified.
Absolutely. And we do know that the pig farmers in Iowa are facing very, very high death rates in offspring, very significant health problems in the pig farmers' population of animals. So when you think about what's possible to go wrong with the genetically modified foods, you definitely make a different choice.
Now, they go on to say they don't even know how many acres of non-GMO crops are grown in the United States because it's difficult to estimate because it's a specialized product. Not interesting. Non-GMO is a specialized product.
Weird. Yeah. Okay, what I want to say is Russia decided that GMO crops were not something they wanted in the country, and so genetic modification of crops has been outlawed in Russia, in China. So in these other countries around the world, the European Union, as far as I know, is rejecting genetically modified crops. So what's going on here that we are so overwhelmed, unfortunately, with this whole business of genetic modification?
Well, one of the reasons the farmers are switching back to I guess we'll call it traditional seeds, not genetically modified seeds.
Quality food.
Is because the food manufacturers are demanding the non-GMO products. And the there could be further growth of non-GMO corn and soybeans if more livestock producers move toward raising chickens and hogs with GMO-free feed. So you see, so it's the chickens, the hogs, the cows. I mean,
do you remember it was about a year ago when there was a terrible avian flu decimating the flocks of chickens in the Midwest? So obviously immune system dysfunction is part of this picture when flocks are given genetically modified feed.
So if this trend continues, they say, and that trend is, in other words, switching back to non-GMO seeds, they feel that more land would go toward, well, right now more land is going toward animal feed than is going for products found on supermarket shelves. But so you have both the farmers producing, raising livestock, are switching back to non-GMO as well as more companies requiring non-GMO products. And now they say, you know, we have to be aware of this because this affects our health. As much as 80% of packaged foods contain ingredients that have been genetically modified. And that's according to the Grocery Manufacturers Association. And they represent more than 300 food and beverage companies, including Kellogg and Heinz. So 80% of the food you buy in the supermarket has genetically modified. So the only way you can get away from it, you have to buy organic, because then those products are not going to say GMO free. You're not going to see that.
Okay, but there are non-GMO products that are not organic. So sometimes you can walk a kind of narrow path looking for that non-GMO seal.
You know, the FDA and the National Academy of Sciences and other regulatory and scientific bodies have said there is no difference between genetically modified crops and their traditional counterparts. So can we trust those agencies if that's the case?
And I hear some music, and that means it's time for us to take a break here on Natural Doc Radio. Stay tuned. More to come.
Have you ever heard of someone going to see the doctor for a checkup or a sore throat or some common complaint, and in that visit they were diagnosed with a much more serious issue? The story I remember is the one about someone taking blood tests before cosmetic surgery, and those blood tests saved the life of the patient by discovering colon cancer. So don't be surprised. Come to Advanced Medical Testing for comprehensive testing to assure wellness. Call 754-216-2332 to schedule an appointment and get the information you need about advanced medical testing, or visit amtcenters.com. That's 754-216-2332 or amtcenters.com.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via telephone, Skype, or email with convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at janetcimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on AM 1470 WNN.
Welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin. And this morning what we're talking about is how to make an informed decision when you're in the grocery aisles of your grocery store or your health food store, or what you need to watch out for. Dr. Slavin?
Well, we left off just saying that the federal agencies in charge of protecting us claim that genetically modified foods are no different than traditionally grown foods.
It's just that they don't nourish you and they affect fertility, hormones, and health of the offspring, survival of the offspring, but no different. No different.
Well, and I think the real issue is since these crops are using lots of the Roundup or weed killer glyphosate, and you're being exposed to those high levels. So it's two issues. One is what impact does genetically modified food have on your body, because they've changed the molecular structure to something never before seen by the body. That's how. That's why they can patent it. And then you have all the herbicides sprayed on the crops that you're consuming as well. So, and this is the government. Who are they really protecting? It sounds like they're protecting the people like Monsanto, as opposed to the consumer.
Now, it's for sure they're not protecting the bees and the butterflies. So there's this big mystery, colony collapse disorder with the bees. It isn't a mystery. They're being killed by the herbicides and pesticides.
Now, just to follow up on the lead-tainted water in Flint. Now, here again, the EPA knew about it, the Environmental Protection Agency, and a federal agency, and they didn't warn the people in time. And I think the person running that agency resigned from their position. But Did you hear? Because I didn't hear it. I happened to find it online. There's another city in Ohio this time where they're also experiencing lead poisoning from the water. And the operator of the treatment plant was accused of falsifying reports. The initial test found elevated levels of lead in 28 homes and one school in a Midwestern village. This is in Ohio, about a small town, 4,400 people. And it's not clear how long lead has been leaking from the town's pipes. So here again, you have another issue like that. Why would an agency, a government agency, falsify reports? I mean, who are they trying? Who are they protecting? Why would they? What do they have to lose? I mean,
their position in government, which they may have come from the corporation that they are in their government position, they're protecting that corporation, or maybe they're protecting their future income as a person, as an employee of the chemical company responsible for these changes. Very interesting.
Well, see,
sad.
The EPA is blaming the plant operator because they falsified reports. But the question still remains, why did the EPA wait until December to post a warning on its website months after it received reports that the Sebring water supply lead levels were unsafe?
It's very, very interesting because there's probably a lot of finger pointing that was going on in the months between January, when this was first brought to the agency's attention, January 2015, all the way to December 2015.
Well, here's another report. Water authorities across the U.S. are systematically distorting water tests to downplay the amount of lead in samples, risking a dangerous spread of the toxic water crisis that has gripped Flint. The controversial approach to water testing is so widespread that it occurs in every major U.S. city east of the Mississippi. And this is where people know about the lead and copper regulations and guess how the pipes were done. I think they say east of the Mississippi, because that's where you have most of your older towns.
Okay, where there were pipes as part of the water supply containing lead. So it isn't necessarily the water itself that's containing lead. It's the chemistry of the water that leads to leaching of lead from those pipes.
I think the problem with all this is you can't trust the authorities. That's what that's the take home all the time. You have to really look out for yourself, because if here, when they find out there's lead in the water to an excess and they don't notify the public, or when they tell you genetically modified foods are just as safe to eat as, natural foods, even though they haven't done any human testing, there's no human testing having been done. The tests on the rats showed there are problems. And in fact, when the original studies came out, they were discredited by people from the industry. And then the original study scientists proved that their studies were accurate and actually sued the people that discredited them. So, there's a lot of this big money involved here and a lot of disinformation.
So, to all of our listeners, the takeaway from this discussion is make the very best possible choices. And I talk to people all the time about how it may be much more expensive to choose organic. And so one of the suggestions that I make, the organic animal protein sources tend to be much more expensive. So you can have smaller portions of those, which ultimately would be really good for your kidneys. And you can learn about creating protein suitable for your level of intake by combining beans, legumes, nuts, and seeds with grains. Now, you don't want to do too much. Once again, you're going to have a small portion of, it could be any kind of bean or lentils. It could be sesame seeds. It could be sunflower, pumpkin seeds, whatever different kind of seed you like, and a little bit of rice or a little bit of quinoa, a little bit of millet. So that combination provides the whole protein profile that you need, and you have a smaller portion of the organic animal protein source and a little bit of this vegetarian source. And of course, what you need to be having on your plate are larger servings of an array of different vegetables. Now, you have to be paying attention to organic or commercial. Well, what you want to look for is non-GMO on those vegetables. And we had a little bit of a discussion yesterday talking about how frozen versus fresh, what is processed, and so on. And again, make the best quality choice that you can. So if something is out of season and you want to have it as part of your meal, frozen, in my opinion, without any added components, no seasoning, no sauces, no additional salt or any additional components, just the plain vegetable. When a vegetable is in season and the organic choice is affordable, that's the way to go.
Well, Janet, you mentioned the expensive part of organic or non-GMO is the protein. But there's study after study showing that there are really risks of eating too much protein.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, that you're doing a favor to your kidneys.
So the recommendation really is to eat about a half a gram of protein per pound, which translates to about 40 to 70 grams a day. In other words, and you think that's too high?
Well, okay, half a gram of protein, 40 grams, you'd be 80 pounds. I don't know.
A little bit on the low side.
Okay.
But, you know, I was doing the arithmetic myself.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't, it's a little tricky to figure it out because, for example, say you're having a piece of fish. Fish isn't 100% protein. So if you have 6 ounces of fish, how do you know how much protein is in the fish? So, you know, that's, a tricky way to, how do you figure it out? So there are some charts out there, but they say that red meat, pork, poultry, and seafood average 6 to 9 grams of protein per ounce. So if you would have 6 ounces of that, you would have between 36 to 54 grams of protein. That's a lot of protein.
You might be overdoing
just from one portion. Because 6 ounces is not a big portion, but that's a lot of protein you're getting.
Well, typically when people are looking for how many ounces per meal, it's lower than that. And when we come back, we'll get into a discussion about portion sizes, perhaps, for your good health. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin. We will be right back.
Are you concerned with the current state of your heart and blood vessels? Advanced Medical Testing Centers, your premier blood draw center, draws for Singulex Labs, which offers specialized blood tests that can help you uncover hidden cardiovascular disease that other tests may miss. Talk to your doctor today about the Singulex tests and call Advanced Medical Testing Centers to schedule your blood draw. We guarantee your on-time appointment and guarantee the lowest price. Call us at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a proud sponsor of Natural Doc Radio, which airs on this station each weekday morning at 10 a.m.
The Institute of Advanced Medicine brings you the latest in natural health care, reviewing the published research, attending conferences with health experts from around the world. That allows the healthcare team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill to provide you the quality and experience you're searching for in a healthcare team. Testing to target your individual needs and treating with natural and holistic approaches, the goal is wellness. You can reach the Institute of Advanced Medicine easily on Commercial Boulevard just west of the Florida Turnpike or three blocks east of University Drive in Lauderhill. You can call us 954-748-4991 to learn more. 954-748-4991. Welcome back to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. We're here today with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we're talking about portion sizes, non-GMO choices, organic, how to choose possibly the best quality diet and still stay within your budget. So, Dr. Slavin, we were talking during the break about the idea of a ketogenic diet, and the ketogenic diet in general, I'm going to get very broad in my statement. Dr. Atkins, essentially, he was proposing a ketogenic diet.
But you call it the Atkins diet, then you have the paleo diet.
Right.
I mean, these are all ketogenic diets if done properly. I think the biggest misconception, and this is that a vegetarian diet is a good diet. A vegetarian diet could be
high in grains.
High in grains, the opposite of a ketogenic diet. And, but it could be a ketogenic diet too, a vegetarian diet, if done properly.
Right.
Now, why should you think about ketogenic diet? I think it first became talked about when they used it to treat kids with epilepsy. You know, they were having seizures. When they were put on this type of diet, the seizures stopped. And these are kids who where the drugs didn't work, by the way. But there are other reasons to consider a ketogenic diet, and we'll talk about how you can implement that, because it's been shown to be effective in Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, as well as cancer.
Well, to a certain extent, some people might categorize Alzheimer's disease as diabetes of the brain. And so removing those food choices, primarily the grains, that have a very, very high blood sugar impact, going to benefit that.
Now, so this is what you have to sort of understand. I think we've always talked about cutting back sugar if you have cancer, because the cancer cells thrive on sugar. But they also thrive on inflammation, which goes along with people eating a high sugar diet. And the higher insulin levels on that diet is associated with more inflammation as well. So you can see how cutting back on the carbohydrates, the sugars are carbohydrate, grains are carbohydrates, fruits are carbohydrates. They all raise your insulin levels, which promotes inflammation. They, of course, clearly increase your sugar load. And these are all detrimental if you're trying to get healthier. Now, when we talk about a ketogenic diet, I think we're probably all aware of the urine dipstick that you can check for ketones. All that means is your body, the ketones are the result of burning fat for energy instead of carbohydrates. So the ketogenic diet is very simple. Don't oversaturate your body with carbohydrates so it can shift over to burning fat, which, by the way, is a much more effective source of energy in our bodies than carbohydrates.
Okay, when you're saying carbohydrates, should we qualify it by saying starchy carbohydrates? Because all of the vegetables we talk about being so health-supporting, they're carbohydrates.
We're talking about the type of carbs that don't raise your insulin levels, and I think that's really the key. The ones that are immediately and quickly converted to sugar are the ones you want to avoid. So that's fruits and grains.
Okay. White potato and corn.
Rice. So we need to cut back and breakfast cereals and...
Not cut back, Dr. Slavin, on breakfast cereals. Breakfast cereals should be maybe a 3 or 4 times a year treat. I just don't think they're good nutrition.
So I think, you know, this is the message. We've heard it indirectly call so many different things, like we mentioned earlier, the Atkins diet, the Paleo diet, the... but what was interesting is, remember when, I guess it was sponsored by the government, they said you have to have low-fat, high-carb diet is what they promoted.
Remember that? Oh, and so what do we have after that suggestion from our very, very concerned for the population government? High cholesterol. Ooh, might that have fallen right in line with the pharmaceutical company's desire to sell you lots of drugs to lower your cholesterol?
You think it was that sinister? You think it was that intentional to do that? Or was it just out of stupidity? You think people sat around the table saying, you know, if, you know, first of all, they blamed... I think it all started with the cholesterol scare. They said, well, to lower your cholesterol, you're going to have to stop eating foods with cholesterol, which are the meat and the eggs.
Eggs. Stop eating eggs.
So cut back on the, you know, cut back there. So stop eating fat. And of course, it comes with the proteins and just go higher on the carbs.
So are we coming to the possible conclusion that our nutrition expert scientists might not be so clever after all?
Well, look who's paying them, I think, is what you alluded to. I think, again, this is the way I look at things, and that's looking at nature. Look how animals eat. Look at what they eat. They don't eat any processed foods in the first place. Why should we be eating processed foods?
So I think you were talking about raw, and I'm not going 100% raw.
But I have to tell you that I've met people who went 100% raw, and they feel so much better. I mean, they would, for example, they would make a pizza crust, they were telling me, using seeds, you know, and it would be raw seeds, and they could make it crispy and everything else. And they were very happy, and a couple things happened. They felt better, and they lost weight when they went on the raw diet. But, you know, not for everybody, clearly.
Clearly.
But we have to understand, I think that that's probably the best diet from a nutritional standpoint. I know, Jana, you mentioned yesterday a lot of people might have trouble with digestion. But I'm willing to say here that if you are, it's an indication of something wrong with your body as opposed to something wrong with the food you're eating. If you're having trouble with digestion, it could be a lack of digestive enzymes. It could be sensitivities to those foods. I think one of the reasons people have digestive issues is they eat too much. You overload the system.
Okay, they eat too much. They possibly are drinking some things that are either very, very hot or icy cold, and that unfortunately affects their digestive system chemistry. I'm at a loss other than this is something that I talk to people about all the time, and it is don't use a microwave.
I think for a lot of reasons. I think
digestive reasons is one of the top categories that I warn people away.
Really, that when you microwave the food? I mean, I recommend, I mean, microwaves create a lot of problems. I think one of them is people microwave in cookware that shouldn't be in a microwave, like plastic or styrofoam. And so now you're getting the chemicals that you need to avoid, the carcinogens, just from the containers. So, you know, it's not that difficult to use an oven to heat up things.
It's right. Very, very true. I'm going to say I have 99% reduced my exposure to foods that have been microwaved. One of the things that I talk to people about is no microwave popcorn. Not only are you getting the genetically modified corn, but you're also getting very poor quality oils and the chemicals that line the bags that you put into the microwave are very, very toxic and very much carried over into the popcorn you're consuming.
So stovetop popcorn.
Well, I don't know. The stovetop popcorn is like that little thing that used to be advertised. You put it on the stovetop in this giant aluminum ball.
Right. No good either?
Okay, aluminum. Okay. I have so much eliminated my exposure to aluminum in cooking. So I still use aluminum for certain cooking things where I want to seal, but between the aluminum and the food is wax paper.
How would you cook popcorn?
Just an old stainless steel pot. Okay. And olive oil on the bottom.
As long as you don't have a cover on it.
Okay, it's, yes. So it's this timing of on and off with the, cover and almost constant agitation of the pot so that, the corn down at the bottom doesn't get burned.
Now, we're talking about popcorn,
and
but that's a
organic
grain.
Popcorn right. To start with.
Yeah, but we're talking about popcorn. That's a grain. And you probably shouldn't be having it.
And people talk to me all the time. Well, I can have popcorn as a snack, can't I? And I say, probably not a good idea. And if you're going to have popcorn, you're going to measure one cup. And the response that I get is not a positive one. I tell people, you might not be my friend at the end of this counseling session, but if you start to make some of these changes, then down the road you'll be my friend again.
And the other, I think, they consider diet food are those rice cakes. Same issue there.
Absolutely. So... very important to pay attention. Now, Dr. Slavin, when you have a very, very thin rice cake and some almond butter on it, but the thing is, that needs to be a meal. I'm moving away from the whole concept of a snack in between breakfast and lunch and in between lunch and dinner. And that music means it's time for us to take a break. You're on Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Herbert Slavin and Janet Cimarelli. They're located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill. And you can find them on the web at advancedmedicaltesting.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience. Clean, comfortable, and efficient. They guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest prices. They test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. They draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostics, Simulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call them today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
Are you in search of the fountain of youth, trying to figure out how to stay young and healthy? There are three main factors that will determine how well you age. The good news is you can take control of all of them and dramatically slow down your aging process. Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor, offers remote counseling sessions. She'll work with you to help you manage these three areas to stay young, vibrant, and healthy. She'll help you maintain optimal health that will have you looking and feeling young again. Sessions are offered via telephone, Skype, or email. Sessions are 30 minutes long, and she'll provide you with the in-depth knowledge and information you need to slow the aging process. Schedule your appointment today at janetcimarelli.com. Don't wait. Your clock is ticking.
And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio, and we are here talking about the best choices you can make in your diet. And that is the way you stay in a very healthy state. Dr. Slavin, there are so many doctors out there telling people they have to stay away from eggs. They have to stay away from certain types of oils. So many misguided approaches to diet. And unfortunately, what we have are people using artificial sweeteners that raise their blood sugar, people using processed foods that raise their blood sugar and their blood pressure, and then again, compromised foods that ultimately translate to elevated cholesterol, and then they're put on blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol-lowering drugs. What should these poor people do?
Well, first, I think you have to recognize that doctors have been turned into salespeople inadvertently. They don't realize it.
I think you call them prescriptionists.
I do. And they don't realize it. They feel they were taught the science that's important to know. But they forgot, they don't remember where that science was coming from. It was the whole curriculum in medical school was developed by the drug companies. So naturally, everything has a bias toward promoting drugs. And if you go to a doctor, basically, that's what he's going to do, is promote drugs, because he thinks that's the only way, well, at least he was taught, that's the way you address these problems. So if someone has high blood pressure, take a drug. If someone has high cholesterol, take a drug. If someone has adult onset diabetes, take a drug. If someone has aches and pains, take a drug. Ask him why, what's causing my problem. He says, well, we don't know, take a drug. So that's the way they were trained. Everything is take a drug.
That's where the money is.
So when you go to a physician, I mean, you can hear what he says. You can accept his prescription. You can go investigate on your own. Are there any other approaches to what your problems are besides a drug? And that's why we're talking about the ketogenic diet. It prevents so many things. Basically, the biggest problem people are facing in this country is the metabolic syndrome, or syndrome X, or insulin resistance, brought on by a low-fat, high-carb, even I'll venture to say high-protein diet, and that's the result of all this illness. So you switch over a little bit, cut way back on the carbs. Even on the protein, you have to cut back, because that's going to block your body's burning of fat for fuel, because the proteins will be used preferentially before fat. Cut back on the proteins, eat more fats, 1 gram of...
And people, I can just see their eyes when you say eat more fat. They have been so frightened about fat.
Well, but, what happens is when you eat more fat and you're cutting back on the carbs, your insulin levels go down, then your fat storing goes down. You start burning your own body's fat for fuel instead of the carbs that you're eating. Therefore, you're going to lose weight, lose fat, and that works every time, but it doesn't happen overnight. It takes your body as much as a couple of weeks to switch back to its natural metabolism, which is burning fat for fuel as opposed to carbs. And if you investigate this type of diet, and there are lots of books written on the ketogenic diet, you can definitely make improvements. And I think two things, you know, smaller portions and just, you know, think about all the carbs you're eating because they're substantial when you start thinking about it.
Okay, so how might the people making these changes, how might their energy improve, suffer? I'm talking about energy and sleep for those people.
No, there's also improvements there as well. And you know what? You know, you heard about, you know, athletes, particularly, you know, runners and things like that, going on these, what they call it, like carb loading. You know, everybody thinks you got to, you know, stock up on carbs before the race. But the interesting thing is athletes that do the carb loading, they can get about 2,000 calories from the glycogen stores in their body. That's how your body stores the carbs. But you can get 20,000 to 30,000 calories in an athlete if you switch over to a ketogenic diet because now your body knows how to burn fat for fuel, and you can go much further. In fact, they say that you can, you'll be able to run, you know, if you're a trained athlete, not everybody, a 100-mile race.
Whoa.